This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, the world. This is They Will Kill, a true crime podcast. I'm Sadie Eck.
And I am Courtney Eck.
And we are sisters.
Yep, check. And we are a true crime podcast, said that, check.
Yep. And Courtney's going to tell you a story tonight.
I am. Tonight I'm going to tell you all about the disappearance of Ashley Reeves.
Tell me about it.
In Please. April of... Sorry. Don't have to beg. I'm just going to... It's lined up. I'm just going to tell it to you. Please. In April of 2006, 17-year-old Ashley Reeves was a high school student who was funny, bright, and full of life and lived with her family in Millstadt, Illinois, not far from St. Louis. Ashley got good grades, she loved her parents, and enjoyed spending time with her boyfriend, Jeremy Smith. Her younger sister, Casey, said she looked up to her big sister as she was motivated, strong, popular, and was always out having fun and had big plans for her future. On the afternoon of Thursday, April 26, 2006, Ashley borrowed her boyfriend's SUV to drop her sister off at home and then left to drive to a job interview in Fairview Heights, which is a town about 15 or 20 minutes away from Millstadt. She was gone for the rest of the afternoon and then into the evening, and when Ashley still hadn't returned by her 10:30 p.m. curfew and no one had heard from her, her family became seriously concerned.
Yeah, I bet.
Ashley was never rebellious and was not in the habit of not checking in, so the family reached out to Ashley's friends, who had also not heard from her that evening, and no one could get her to answer her phone or return their texts. Ashley's mom called police in a total panic, and police launched a missing persons investigation immediately.
Good.
I know. Good. He was like, we get a lot of these calls. We get these calls all the time, but he was like, this one just felt different. We just went for it. They soon found the car Ashley had been driving in Latterman Park, which was in Belleville, about 15 minutes away from Ashley's home. Inside of the SUV, they found the outfit Ashley had packed for the job interview, as well as clothes to play basketball in, but there was no sign of the teenager anywhere. Police were very disturbed by the discovery and started questioning all of Ashley's friends and family to see if they could get a better sense of when she was last seen or heard from. They questioned her boyfriend, Jeremy, who was described as a, quote, parent's dream, and was good-hearted, wholesome, and an honest person who was very kind to Ashley.
Don't trust him.
Regardless, Jeremy was immediately questioned as he was one of the people who was closest to her, and he was very cooperative and forthright when speaking to the police. He told them that he was out of town having dinner with his uncle on the night Ashley disappeared. He said that the last time he'd heard from Ashley was when she'd reached out around noon on the day she disappeared and told him to call her if he had a chance. But that was the last thing he'd heard from her. Police said that they felt pretty strongly that he hadn't had anything to do with her disappearance, and toward the end of the interview, he revealed some information that would be crucial to the case. He said that when she'd texted him at noon the day before, she told him that she'd planned to go to the job interview that night and then was going to play basketball. Police had found her basketball clothes in the SUV and were immediately curious about why she would drive 15 minutes away to play basketball rather than just play at school or somewhere closer to home. As police questioned Ashley's friends, one of them revealed that Ashley would frequently meet a man at a park to play basketball, and that man was 26-year-old Samson Shelton. Sam was the driver's ed and gym teacher at a nearby school who also aspired to be a pro wrestler, and his wrestling name was The Teacher.
Oh, no, that's gross. That's really yucky. I don't like that.
Sam had been a student teacher at Ashley's school at one point, and he was the kind of teacher that all of the girls had a crush on with his athletic build and pretty blue eyes.
Yeah. And how old is Ashley again?
17.
Okay.
Police questioned Ashley's boyfriend, Jeremy, about her friendship with Sam and wondered if he could have had something to do with her disappearance. Jeremy immediately defended Sam and said that he couldn't imagine him ever harming anyone in any way. Ashley's sister said that she and her mom made their way through Ashley's phone bill and called every number on there to see if she could find somebody who knew something about what had happened to her, and Sam's number had been called from Ashley's phone a couple of times on the night she disappeared. Ashley's mother immediately got a hold of Sam, and he had been out line dancing at the time and said that he hadn't seen or heard from her, like on the night. So okay. He was one of the first people they called. Yeah. Luckily, Ashley's mother was the account holder on her phone.
Good. So she could get access.
Yeah, right away. Initially, police just considered Sam a minor lead as they were made aware that he and Ashley had a friendship and occasionally played basketball together. But as they questioned Ashley's friends, they began to hear rumors that the relationship might have been more romantic in nature than they originally thought, at least according to what Ashley was telling her friends.
And so Sam is older. He was a student teacher, but not like a current?
No, he's a current teacher. Sorry, he had been a student teacher at Ashley's school. They had met when she was in middle school. Now she's in high school. He was a gym teacher and driver's ed teacher at a rival
school. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
But he's still older than her. And
yeah, he's a 26-year-old teacher. Yes, yeah. He's 26. He's a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the school where he worked, took Sam out of baseball practice, and brought him in for questioning, and he was extremely friendly and helpful. He said that despite what Ashley had been gossiping about with her friends, their relationship was strictly platonic and friendly, and the most contact they'd ever had was the occasional hug goodbye after they hung out.
Yeah, just don't do that either. Stop.
Just don't play
basketball. Don't hang out.
Young girls by yourselves. If you're going to have some sort of like neighborhood league or a couple of kids or something, I don't know. It's
I just think that's a really tricky boundary, obviously.
I agree. You know? I agree. Yeah. I mean, after school tutoring or something, or basketball at school, like there are things that are appropriate ways to spend time with a younger person if you think they need an adult to spend time with them, right?
We like babysat teachers' kids every once in a while, but like never alone, you know. Maybe the teacher would bring us home or, you know, but.
Right. Drive us to or from.
Yeah. It wasn't like we were buddies. It was a job.
Yeah. And it wasn't hanging out with them like on our own recreationally.
No.
At night.
No.
So he told police that he'd actually been avoiding Ashley for several days because he'd recently sensed that her feelings had changed and she'd started calling him so frequently. Some days it felt that it was almost nonstop. He said that he'd started avoiding her in hopes that she'd get over her crush and leave him alone sooner than later. Despite Sam's friendly and cooperative nature, police felt skeptical of the young teacher's story. Big fucking surprise.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty skeptical. I'm no police, but I don't believe it.
I don't have that deep and extensive forensic training, but... So they continued to press him for information, hoping they could get something out of him that would lead to Ashley. Police confronted Sam with the specific things that Ashley's friends had shared about their relationship, and at that point, his story started to change a little bit. He then told the police that maybe they had more contact than just a goodbye hug.
Ugh.
He started out by clarifying that they had, quote, never kissed. He said, never, multiple times. We never kissed. But he did admit that they had sexual intercourse in the back of a truck. And he, quote, felt absolutely terrible about that.
Oh, I bet he felt really terrible about it.
They never kissed Sadie, though. Gross. So it doesn't count.
Just right, like, does he think he's Pretty Woman over there or something?
It's
like,
not romantic. Oh my God. Yes, seriously. Yeah, it's not intimate if you don't kiss. It's just sexual intercourse with a minor.
Oh God.
Yeah. Just statutory rape.
Oh.
His story shifted again during the interrogation, and he started to admit that he had pursued a relationship with a 17-year-old, but later said that he'd been trying to end the relationship. Police said that aside from the fact that he had already admitted to having sex with a minor, the story changed so much as he spoke that they were extremely suspicious that Sam had something to do with Ashley's disappearance.
Uh-huh.
Once again, I'm not trained in forensic science.
Yeah.
I think you're onto something,
guys. Right? I think you're cracking the case wide open over here, guys. Do it. Keep going.
At one point, detectives finally asked if he was ready to come clean because, quote, the ship was sinking, and they caught him in lie after lie. Sam then admitted to police that Ashley had been in his car the day before, on the very day that Ashley had disappeared, and they'd gotten into an argument, so he'd left her by the side of the road, but she was very much alive.
Mm-hmm.
He said that he pulled over and unbuckled her seatbelt and insisted she get out of the car, but she refused. He said he realized he'd have to force her out, and she was screaming and kicking as he physically took her out of his car, and that he put her on the ground on the side of Radio Range Road and then took off. Police asked him why he then went line dancing, knowing that Ashley was wandering somewhere in the dark on the side of the road, especially after he heard from Ashley's mother that she was missing.
Right.
He said that he, quote, didn't want to drive by there because if he drove by there and she'd been hit by a car or something, he could not stand that.
My God.
He said that he has a, quote, very weak stomach when it comes to horror movies and still had stuff in his head from the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and that he would have felt, quote, absolutely horrible if he'd seen her dead on the side of the road.
Okay. That is shocking.
Sadie.
Courtney. Oh my God.
Sadie, he's sensitive.
He has a sensitive tummy.
He's sensitive. He's still thinking about the new Chainsaw Massacre. It's still in his head. All of these days, weeks, months later, Sadie. So how is he then to be expected to confirm or see with his eyes that his 17-year-old lover has been hit by a car?
Right?
He cannot be expected to do that. That is too much to expect from someone.
Like, and it should also be illegal to abandon a minor on the side of the road in the dark.
Yes. Yeah. There should be some sort of like anti-Samaritan law against that, for sure. So police continued to question him for 12 hours, but he continued to stick to his story that he simply left her on the side of the road, but that she'd been alive at that point. Then at one point, Sam left to take a bathroom break and ran into the lead detective, Detective Johnson, on his way, who he was familiar with because Sam had been an explorer in the Law Enforcement Explorer Program, which is a part of the Boy Scouts, where the scouts learn about law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
Detective Johnson decided at that point that he should take over the interview, hoping Sam would be more forthcoming since they had more of a personal relationship already. 20 minutes later, Detective Johnson asked Sam what his grandmother would say if he explained the situation to her, and Sam responded that he just wanted to go home and tell his mom and grandma what happened just to clear it up with them. He's like, I just want to go home and tell them because they're, you know, I don't want them to think that I had anything to do with this, essentially. So the detective continued to bring up his mom and grandmother and said that everything they taught him growing up was within him and essentially that he needed to tell the truth, knowing that's what his grandma and mom would want. Sam started to weep at that point and asked to be alone, which detectives allowed for a few minutes, knowing that he was on the verge of confessing.
Mm-hmm.
Sam then asked if he could show detectives where she was and then confessed to what had actually happened to Ashley.
Mm-mm.
He said that he drove her deep into a wooded area in a park called Citizens Park and then, quote, tied a thing around her neck to make it look like someone had choked her.
Oh.
Police agreed to let him show them where he dumped her body, but at that point it was dark and rainy and Sam had a hard time remembering where he'd taken her exactly once they were out in the thick woods. Detectives said that they'd suspected he'd taken them on a wild goose chase after searching for about 30 minutes with no sign of Ashley. But they continued to search until their flashlights landed on something in the bushes, and they found Ashley's body where Sam had left it the day before.
No.
Ashley was laying on the ground on her back with ligature marks around her neck, her tongue protruding from her mouth, and she was covered from head to toe in insect bites as she'd been in the woods for around 30 hours at that point.
No.
Police approached her body and were absolutely stunned when she started to move.
What?
Surprise! This is a survivor story!
Oh my God.
she was still alive, you guys.
Oh my God.
Yep. I thought we could use a survivor
Surprise
story
after of the nation.
Two Hell House stories. I have taken you through enough in the last couple of weeks.
Oh my goodness.
So there is body cam footage. You can see them find her. There is footage of her, of them finding her. Oh, and in the footage, God. I know, Ashley opened her eyes and weakly gestured to them with her arm, and they realized that she was still alive, but just barely.
Oh my God, I have full body chills. And I know that phrase is like, but yeah, like I literally I do. Can you imagine?
No.
I would die. I would die of excitement and fright and like everything, all of the emotions all at once. It's the tongue protruding part. Like that, you know, like that.
Well, just, she's laying there and she can't put her tongue back in her mouth.
Oh, like honey.
It's out of
her head.
For 30 hours, they said there was like insects and bugs and things crawling all over her face and her mouth. Like, yes. Yes. And you can hear the men, like you can hear, they're just like,
oh my
giddiness.
God.
They're just like, Ashley,
I just got chills again.
Oh my God. No. Like holding her hand, like just so excited. Like, can you talk to me? Can you talk? Are you? Yeah.
Believe it.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, no. I'd piss my pants. I would piss my pants.
Oh my God.
Tears in my eyes talking about it.
Thank God. They did this. Like, it just took a day. And they
one day
figured out how to get the confession and they could find her.
Can you believe it?
Like, that never happens.
Never happens. I mean, think about how many people that were just, you know, a couple of hours away from being saved.
Yes.
You know, like one little detail.
It could have just happened quicker. Ugh, yeah. So many chills.
So she was unable to communicate with the police officers who initially found her, and they raced her to the nearest hospital to try to save her life.
Hurry, go.
Right. The paramedics who worked on Ashley didn't think her chances of survival were very good at all, considering she'd been strangled to the edge of her life and then left in the cold woods without a coat or warm clothing overnight and clearly had suffered a traumatic brain injury.
Oh my God. I mean, thank God, you know, it's so lucky she's young and like had all of this life still in her body, you know?
Yes. Ugh. Yes. Big time. My cracky ass dried up fucking witch's body would last like 35-40 minutes tops.
I literally I threw my back out recently by sleeping too long in one position, Courtney.
Oh yeah. Yes. Yep. I get it.
Wow.
Yep. Sam gave a full confession at that point and described how he and Ashley had gotten into an argument, as he described, and she refused to get out of his car. This next part is super graphic, but I'm just going to tell you all the details so you can understand what this poor girl endured and survived. He said that he was able to use his pro wrestling skills to get her into a tight chokehold, and when he did that, he heard her neck pop, and then she immediately went limp.
Oh, no.
He said that he panicked at that point and decided to make it look like she'd been strangled in the woods. Look, quote unquote, look like she'd been strangled in the woods.
So I don't know what... strangled her in the woods.
So he tried to joke her with his bare hands.
Mm-mm.
He said that she was still breathing at that point, so he put a belt around her neck and pulled on it for as long as he could. He said that he had to turn his head away because he couldn't watch what he was doing. And then he heard her make a gurgling noise, and when he turned back, she had foam and spit coming from her mouth, and she was, quote, the sickest color he'd ever seen, and her tongue was protruding from between her teeth.
Mm-mm.
He then resumed choking her with the belt, using his fucking foot for leverage that time, and he did so until the belt broke.
Oh my God.
He repositioned, I don't know if he repositioned the belt or used his hands, I read two different things, but basically then he started again so he could continue to strangle her until there were no more signs of life left in Ashley's body, and then he left her in the woods. He strangled her 3 times, and she fucking survived, and broke her neck, and then strangled her 3 times.
Wow.
He said he then, quote, darted out of there like a bat out of hell.
Ugh, I hate this guy.
And let's not forget that after this, he goes fucking line dancing. Mm-hmm. Like, there's video of him, too, at the line dancing place. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then after describing how he'd brutally strangled a 17-year-old girl to the edge of her life and then left her in the cold, dark woods to die, he asked detectives if he was going to be able to get contact solution to take his contacts out and a toothbrush to brush his teeth.
Oh my God. He is just catered. He was catered to his whole life.
100 million, billion, trillion percent.
Oh my God.
The officer replied, I don't think so. It was just like the most perfect. He's like,
yeah.
I don't think so. Sadie, did you know that 1 out of 8 couples struggles with infertility?
I actually did kind of know that, but that's because I'm a doula, so I don't count. I don't think most people know that.
No, that's a lot of people, and I don't think most people know are really ready to talk about it. But we need good data and information about our bodies in order to have informed conversations with our doctors and make the best decisions for ourselves and our futures.
Well, fertility equals hormones, and if your hormones are in balance, then it's a problem for everybody.
And that's why Modern Fertility was created. It's an easy and affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home with a simple finger prick. Mail it in with a prepaid label and you'll get your personalized results within 6 business days.
You'll get insight into your hormone levels, like your ovarian reserve, which means if you have enough, like more or fewer eggs than average for your age, and other important factors that can impact your fertility. The results go deep into what every hormone means, and you can also download the results to review with your doctor for next steps, which is awesome.
Yeah. Traditional hormone testing at fertility clinics can cost over $600, but Modern Fertility tests the same general set of hormones at a fraction of the price. And if you go to modernfertility.com/theywill30, you get $30 off your test.
Plus, you can get reimbursed for the test through your FSA HSA.
So right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $30 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/theywill30.
This is a limited time offer for $30 off. That means your test will cost $149.
Nice.
Hormone testing at a fertility clinic can cost much more than 3 times as much.
Get $30 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/theywill30.
modernfertility.com/theywill30.
He then asked, get this. He then asked if he would be able to get, quote, like a little private toilet because he can't pee when there's people around because of his, quote, urinary stress disorder.
O-M-G. What?
Yes.
Where does he think he's going?
And the detective replied again, yeah, I don't know, Sam. To which Sam replied, yeah, because I'll be miserable if I can't pee.
Wow. Yep. I just am really actually very glad that he gets to suffer now. Like, oh boy. I was
like, do you know what's miserable, Sam?
Yeah.
Taking the life of a fucking 17-year-old, yes. Like torturing her to near death and then leaving her in the cold, in the woods, in the dark.
Yes.
For 30 fucking hours. Like, you have no idea what misery is. Not even the beginning of the slightest clue what it feels like to be miserable. I could also kind of relate because the way my brain works, like I would have wound down the interview and then the officers would be sort of talking to me and I'd be like, oh shit, how am I going to take out my contact?
Seriously,
it's definitely.
Yeah.
But I would keep that shit to myself. I would.
Yeah.
Shh. Right. You tried to kill somebody.
Yeah.
You'll figure out how to pee, dumbass.
Right. God. Are we going to talk about what they argued about?
Yes.
Okay.
So Samson Shelton was arrested and charged with attempted murder. He posted bail and was released while awaiting trial.
He got bail?
Yeah.
He got bail.
Yes, he got bail. He got bail.
A statutory raper, attempted murderer, got bail.
Yep.
And she is vulnerable.
Yep.
And still alive for now.
Yep.
And they let him out on bail.
Yep. Yep. Admitted. He admitted to trying to murder this girl.
Yep. Brutal murder.
Brutally murder this girl. Yes. Yep. And then made it all about himself and then talked about how he can't pee pee too good. Mm-mm. So right before he was set to go to trial, he attempted to commit suicide by taking prescription pills and drinking Jägermeister. Jägermeister.
Of course. He is really bad at this.
And then he punched and spit on the EMTs who showed up to save his life.
I'm over him. So over him.
Get ready, because it's worse. They also found the words "do not resuscitate" written on his chest, which the word resuscitate, like if anybody actually knows how to spell resuscitate, I just picture him like Googling it and then like writing it backwards. That's fucking
totally
grow up. And when they brought him into the hospital, he called a nurse a racial slur and kicked her in the face.
You are kidding me.
Nope. Authorities felt very confident that the suicide attempt had simply been a way to potentially garner sympathy in court. Ugh. And I very much agree with them.
Yeah.
Clearly. Ashley's family desperately wanted her to avoid to have to tell her story so soon after her attack. So they agreed that the prosecution should offer a plea deal. They did. And Sam accepted the plea and pled guilty in exchange for 20 years in prison. He will be eligible for parole in April of 2024 when he will be 44 years old.
Oh, that's not good enough. I figured that was coming up if this happened in 2006.
Yeah. I know. I was like, fuck, man. How is that like 20 years ago? Wow. Help me. 2006 was just 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So Ashley, let's talk about Ashley, beat all odds and made a stunning recovery from the attack.
That's amazing.
She was initially in a coma, and it took a while for her to wake up. I don't know how long, as her brain processed the trauma of what she'd endured both physically and mentally. Over the next few months, she had to learn how to do a lot of things that she'd forgotten how to do after her brain was deprived of oxygen, including speaking, eating, and drinking. She said she remembers her first drink of water, and it was amazing.
Oh, I cannot imagine. I just got chills again. I cannot imagine.
Within a year, she had made a near full recovery, and a year she was like back to normal and was able to graduate from high school.
I mean, the fact that she isn't just laying in a bed.
I know.
Our bodies and our brains are amazing. They're her will amazing. Power like her...
amazing. I know. So Ashley has very much moved on with her life, is a mother of two, and doesn't remember the incident at all, and has no memory of the days leading up to and the weeks after she was attacked.
That's a tiny mercy.
Yeah. The one thing she does know is that she was the one who was trying to break off the relationship that day.
Of course.
And that's why they got into a fight in the first place. Of course that's what it was. Of course he threw a fucking baby fit and tried to kill her.
Yeah.
She said that she just watched the police interrogation videos recently and had to turn it off after just about a minute because she was so disgusted by Sam's lies and total lack of remorse.
Yeah, no doubt.
She said she's also watched the police body cam videos from when they found her right up to the point that they show her lying in the woods.
Ugh.
She said she wanted to see where she was left to give herself a sense of pride for knowing how hard she fought and how far she'd come. She revisited the spot where Sam left her in 2017 and said, quote, "It's kind of hard to believe that this is actually where I was for that long and in that condition. It makes me feel like maybe I'm as tough as everyone says I am. I'm a fighter and I just keep wanting to push myself harder and harder."
Oh, so many chills. You are so amazing. So Ashley, amazing. Like, I know it's not so easy to just know that you're amazing, but girl, you are so amazing.
So amazing. Yeah, she's got two kids. She works. She does. She's a caregiver.
She can gorgeous. Walk.
Like she can
around.
Yeah,
she can brush her own hair.
Yeah, remarkable. It's remarkable. Wow. She's a fucking miracle. Yes.
Wow.
She's an actual miracle. So I did want to throw in a little bit of information about grooming because I think that's important when you're talking about a case like this. Yep. And I also, like, in 2022, where everything is, like, child trafficking, like, we think that just everything all the time is a child trafficking scenario.
Right.
I don't want to be, like, overly sensational, especially when talking about educators. But I did look at educators. How common is it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because he was an educator. So according to the Journal of Child Sexual Abuse, which is a scholarly and peer-reviewed journal.
Oh, I'm so sorry, you guys. Whoever puts that together, wow, that's a job.
But I found this, you know, it looked like it was a peer-reviewed article, but then I double, triple checked because I was like, what if I just found some weird, like, QAnon website or something? You know what I mean? Uh-huh.
No, yeah. I do.
Yes. No, the Journal
of Child
Sexual Abuse is real and very well respected. So this is just one long quote. I'm just going to read directly from it. In a study of 80,000 children between K through 12, 9.6 said that they had been abused by an educator. 9.6%, wow. I'm sorry, percent. This is pretty consistent with a study in Israel where 8% of secondary students reported being abused by an educator.
That feels very high.
I thought so too. And I don't know what the, if that is... Because, like, I was sort of sexually harassed, not sort of, I was sexually harassed in high school by a teacher, like, for being gay, mm-hmm. you know? So I don't know if they were including, like, verbal thing, you know, I don't know entirely what the criteria is, but I think when they're saying abuse, they mean, like, abused.
Any sort of, right.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. So educators targeting elementary school children were often high achievers in the profession. So we're talking first about elementary school abusers. So they were very high achievers in the profession who had been recognized with awards for their teaching mm-hmm. efforts.
Of course.
The popularity and trust evoked by these educators may perplex school officials and community members when allegations of sexual misconduct are made. As a further complication, the teacher's professional reputation may result in a tendency to dismiss or ignore allegations. Mm. It was theorized that this type of abuser works at being recognized as a good teacher to secure trust and an irreproachable reputation in furtherance of his or her goal of sexual misconduct. Right.
Yeah, right? It makes total sense.
Yep. For example, in Texas, a well-regarded band director had been convicted of sexual misconduct with a student. It was found that he kept decades worth of pictures and notes as trophies.
Ugh. Vomit.
In contrast, educators who teach at the late, middle, and high school level target victims in this age range. They might be outstanding teachers, although they might also be mediocre. Sexual abuse at this level may be less premeditated and planned and more of a result of bad judgment.
Right.
For example, a recent case in New York State involved a married 33-year-old teacher who was abusing substances. The teacher reported feeling flattered that one of her 15-year-old male students found her attractive. Their affair, quote, became public when the highly intoxicated teacher announced it to students and others nearby during a school basketball game.
That's a problem.
Yep. The majority of educators who abuse are classroom teachers, about 18%. The next most common abusers are coaches at 15%, but bus drivers, administrators, and others affiliated with the school might also offend. Most sexual abuse of students by adults occurs in the school, in empty classrooms, hallways, and in offices.
Ugh, I hate it.
It is common, I know, it is common for teachers to target vulnerable or marginal students who feel especially gratified by the extra attention. So all of that said, 97% of child sex offenders are not educators.
Right.
Okay. So yes. Again, like treading lightly on that topic, like your kids are not it's pretty unlikely they're going to be abused at school.
Well, sure. Right? And teachers and administrators and bus drivers and all of it, like our heroes across the board.
100%, a million, trillion, billion percent. Yes. But I think it's, you know, if there is somebody who is slightly predatory or very predatory in your school,
course.
They're going to target the kids who aren't going home straight after school, mm-hmm. you know, who mm-hmm. know that their parents aren't paying close attention. Well, so,
it brings up, I've been thinking a lot about my oldest is on the bus this year and he's the very first one to be picked up, and the paranoid part of my brain is like, that feels kind of vulnerable,
right?
That he, you know, and I don't not trust his bus driver, I don't know the guy, I don't know, but it's just sort of like it's in there, it's, I think about it, like,
yeah,
he's alone with a strange man that I don't know, I don't know how long it, you know, like, I'm just, it's a trust, big trust thing, like I'm just letting him on this empty bus, this completely empty bus every morning. And hoping for the best. Yeah.
And I'm sure he's alone with him for 1 minute to 3 minutes. But yes, I get yeah, it. I totally know, get it.
It is in the back of my mind.
Yeah. Well, you just have to, I mean, these, again, if you're engaged with your children, if you're talking to your children, if you're like, you know, somewhat involved in their lives, like the chances of somebody abusing them or grooming them are significantly less, right? So let's keep that in mind. But that said, a little bit of grooming statistics too, just in case some people aren't aware of grooming behavior in 2022, because it's super fucking important, because it's super sneaky. Offenders carefully groom victims by systematically separating them from family and peers. Once isolated, victims are more easily exploited and manipulated into sexual relationships. 91 child sex offenders who were not educators were interviewed about how they selected and maintained their victims. Offenders reported using a variety of methods to select victims and to establish and maintain sexual relationships. Victims were often selected because the offender perceived them as vulnerable, isolated, and/or emotionally needy. So the first step is targeting. They choose children who are vulnerable, with less parental oversight, socially isolated, or emotionally needy. Their strategies are caretaking, either babysitting, teaching, or tutoring. They form special relationships with them. They welcome into their home and gain the trust of their parents. They give them gifts, games, and special time. They isolate them. They seize on feelings of being unloved and unappreciated. They form emotional bonding and trust building. They desensitize the children to sex through taking pictures, watching pornographic videos. They use pretense, like teaching, exploring, and closeness to exploit the victim's natural sexual curiosity or uncertainty. And then the maintenance of these relationships is through bribes, gifts to ensure continued compliance. They threaten dire consequences to ensure secrecy. They threaten to blame the victim. And they threaten loss of their loving relationship. So there's some tips, but back to Ashley. She fucking survived. Her predatory teacher, she survived. She's here to this day. She's a loving mother of two. Yes. She's a badass and a hero and an actual miracle. Good for you, Ashley Reeves.
Oh my God. You did it. You are the best. You win all the prizes.
Yes. And we don't even have to talk about Sam, because it's clear that Sam was a coddled, fucking spoiled, rotten, like completely dissociated, like completely dissociated.
And the fact that he had a diagnosis for his peed disorder or whatever is like,
I meant to look and see if that's real. Right? I gotta look that up. Ugh. Urinary distress. What is it called?
I have no idea. Fakeness. I am too coddled to pee by myself.
Urinary stress disorder. I'm gonna look it up. See if it's you. Real stress. It doesn't even pop up. Oh, urinary stress disorder in cats pops up.
I mean, I think that we've all known shy peers. Like,
yes.
If they know anybody's around, or you like look at them or whatever, they can't pee anymore. But God, that guy.
Stress incontinence. So there's stress incontinence. Yeah, I don't think urinary stress disorder is a real thing.
That's what his mom told him, so he could have his fucking baby ego stroked.
Exactly. Told him, like, sends a note to his teacher and stuff.
Right.
No, there's like, the opposite, where stress makes you pee-pee too much.
But right. That's exactly right. She told the teacher that he needed his own private bathroom time.
Yeah.
To go pee because he had this made-up disorder.
Stress disorder.
One of the kids picked on him or something. Like, you know, that's exactly what happened.
Yep.
Ugh. Wow. Oh well, God, Court, good one. That was really good. So many chills. So many twists and turns. I'm so glad she sort of survived.
I was gonna start with it being a survivor, but I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna let this one be. Special surprise.
Yes, it worked. I was surprised. I was wondering why you didn't say murder. I did think of that, but I forgot. Yeah. And then I remembered.
Yeah.
You did it.
Yep. Yay. Left it vague.
On the off chance that Ashley ever hears this, I mean, goodness gracious. Wow. You are amazing. Applause, thank you for letting us share your story. It's incredible.
Good on you, man. Good on you for making me believe that things can sometimes go right after they've gone horribly wrong.
Yes, and then you can just like thrive. Ourselves
to survive. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yep. Love it.
Yep. Good. Well, so we are front loading a little bit because I'm going to Mexico City tomorrow. Mm. Yeah.
Oh, first, I'm so excited. First big vacation since COVID.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. It's our first venture out. It's Laura's birthday coming up. And so we decided, we were like, we could drive up to Petoskey or something in Michigan. And then we're like, wait, we can go other places now.
Yeah, we're vaccinated. We can, yes. We can do this.
Exactly. Yep.
So oh, that's exciting.
I know. So we're going to Mexico City. So I'm going to save name time. I have a couple names, but I'm going to save it for next time.
Well, I sent you one today. Don't you forget.
Back on the Earl Grey Sons.
I was behind an Earl Grey plumbing truck again. Fan.
I actually cut that out of the last episode because I was kind of mean to you. Sadie brought Earl Grey up again in the last episode as her name time. And I was like, let it go. But it sounded really mean when I listened back. Sadie can't let it go. Then she did text me the Earl Grey.
It's going to be one of those things. I'm going to now see it all the time.
Well, now it is becoming funny. Now that you're like texting me the photo, it is funny. Now it is. It's
right. I know. Yeah. I knew I would get you on board.
There's that funniest thing time. Ever. Oh, my God. Anyway.
All right. So are we doing date breaths meditation style? Jingle style? What are you feeling?
I'm not entirely sure. Let's just see what comes out of my body. I'm just going to zen out. I'm just going to
see what happens.
Yeah, let the demons inhabit me. the appreciation demons.
Yep, you can have your own appreciation demon. Just sign up for our Patreon. You can come over and hang out with us over there if you want. And you know who did it?
Tell me.
Thank you so much to Yvonne M.
Yvonne says the appreciation demon. And then all the people come down from the stands, from the mountain, in not a satanic way, but in a celebratory way of Yvonne. She's the one that's upon it. She's the one that's upon. She's the one that they want to bring on and on and on into the future of the world, Yvonne. Yeah, rock opera. I guess we're going rock opera. I guess we're always kind of going rock opera.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Thank you so much to Alex B.
Alex B. is one that we all know to be the quantity and the quality of variety of Alex. That B to the centimeter from... the edge of all of the existence in the world, in the universe. Alex B, just to recap what I said, is centimeters from the edge of knowing and being and becoming all that they would ever want to be. Just mere fucking centimeters. Do you understand what I am saying to you, Alex B? You're there. You're right fucking there. It's right there. Just get it,
just
Alex.
Go, just reach out.
Fucking get it.
Just reach out, right touch it.
There. Thank you, Alex.
Yes. Thank you so much to Grant G.
If I was going to grant you three wishes, I would wish that you remain exceptionally powerful and grounded and focused and available in your power, in your process, in your communication with the divine within yourself, because you have it. Stay with it. Stay with it. Wish two. I would grant you the wish that you would not give up. Yep. Never give up. Stay focused. Stay positive. Stay bright. Stay up. There will be downs, but only in service of the ups, right? So sometimes you get down, but that down is your down. It belongs to you. And it's only there to teach you how to get the fuck back up, because that is what you are going to do. I would grant you this third wish, that you know that you are where you are, and nothing that you are supposed to have has not, will not be given to you, right? So you will always have what you're supposed to have. The universe never takes something from you that doesn't belong to you, that does belong to you, right? So if it belongs to you, you will get it 100% of the time. If it's not yours, you won't get it. You're not supposed to have it. So just stay true in that, believe in that, because it's true.
Grant.
Yeah.
Get it.
One more.
All right. Thank you so much.
It's me wringing my hands.
Yeah. To Lisa H.
Lisa, listen, Lisa. Have you ever wondered why, when you look around at everyone around you, that they are looking at you with a little bit of that sparkle, sparkle in their eyes. They're looking at you with a little bit of the razzle dazzle in their souls. It's because when they look at you, Lisa, they feel what it feels like to know a person who is exciting, who is intoxicating, who is enticing, who is inspiring, who is just wonderful. You're just wonderful, Lisa. And so you don't have to wonder anymore. That's why they're looking at you like that.
Yeah. Breathtaking.
Period. End of fucking story.
Fuck yes.
Don't question me about it anymore, Lisa.
Stop asking.
I'm not going over this again. Because when I look at you, it's too powerful. So, Dan, thank you guys so much.
We did it. We did another episode. We did it.
Yes.
We can't wait to do it again.
Yes, and thank you so much for being here every week. And if you want to spend more time with us, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube at They Will Kill. You can go to our website, theywillkill.com. You can email us at theywillkillpodcast@gmail.com. And if you liked today's episode, if you're inspired by it, if you got some fucking chills from it, share it with somebody you know will want to hear about it. Or if they are equally fucking weird and out there as the ex-sisters are, and you know that they should be a part of this family, invite them in. We would love to have them.
Yes, please do. Speaking of please and chills, you guys go listen to Courtney X new podcast. It's not new. It's
thank old. You. Season Dude. 2 of Please Leave, my horror podcast, is back.
It's just so good, Courtney. And I really, thanks. I mean, like, I'm your biggest fan, duh. But also, I am very picky. We've talked about this before. I'm legitimately picky about horror. I was going to say true crime. We do that well also, but the horror. And you just nail it. You nail it. And I don't know how, and I'm so glad you do. So please leave. It's out right now. The new episode is out. Go listen to it and don't be jerks and give her a review and tell her that she gets $1 million so that she'll continue to make them. Okay.
Yes. And please share because I really, really, really want to keep doing it, but it's hard to
getting that momentum going. It's just a lot of work. Especially when you're just trying, you're so busy anyway.
Yeah.
To see that it's moving helps continue. Like the only reason we're still doing this is because it continues to grow somehow.
Yeah, truly. Yeah. I mean, truly, if I know people are listening and they're counting on it, I'm going to fucking do it. But right now there's like, you know, 14 of you, which I love you for. But yeah, if it's growing and I know people want to hear more, then I will continue to make more and make it more of a priority and like build a team, which I am doing currently. I'm building a team to keep it going because I can, the stories just come out of me like water. I can just make them forever.
I'm going to be the leader of your bridesmaids
about it's coming out of me like lava. Water. That's what.
I'm the official fan club leader. What is it called?
Thank you. So fan club leader.
If you want to be in my fan club, come hang out with me. We can talk about each episode every week. It's so good.
Yes. Thank you. Well, please rate, review, and subscribe for both of the podcasts.
Yes. And thank you, AJ Bergens, for our music.
Thank you so much.
And remember, go listen to Courtney's podcast, you guys. Please leave. Thanks. Do it. You won't regret it. It'll make you want to die inside because it's too scary.
It's pretty scary. I do think it's pretty scary. I pretty much scare the shit out of myself. So
no, it check really it out. Is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we have a new, one of our listeners submitted some stories. So if you have scary stories, I am picky. So I will be honest. If I don't think it's a good fit. And by picky, I mean, I know what kind of stories I want on Please Leave. And it's like, it's pretty specific because there are other podcasts that tell different kinds of stories. And I don't want to tell those kinds of stories. So if I say no, it's not because your story is not good. It's just because it's not a good fit. But one of our listeners submitted and her stories are going to be in this season. And so I'm really excited to tell her stories. And if there are other people that have stories that they want me to read, I'm very happy to read them.
Yes. Love it.
Yeah, we love you guys. And thank you. And see you next week. And we love you so much.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
I'm journalist Carolyn Osorio, and I invite you to join me and my co-host, Brandon Morgan, on our podcast, Criminal Mischief. From law enforcement officers seeking justice to victims' families seeking answers, every week there's a new case and a new victim whose story deserves to be told. New episodes of Criminal Mischief drop every Tuesday.